Welcome to the Tailored to Life podcast, the one and only fitness and nutrition podcast that goes way beyond just training and nutrition and helps you create a life by design. I am your host, Cody McBroom. I am a trainer, a nutritionist, entrepreneur, father, husband, coach, leader. I am just a regular dude. I'm an average guy who is trying to do above average things. I'm trying to do it all in an above average physique. And this podcast is dedicated to helping you do the same. So if you're an individual who has been here before, thank you for returning. If you are a new listener to the show, thank you for showing up. For everybody listening, I know you're here for one reason and one reason alone, and that is expansion. It is to grow as an individual and to get better today than you were yesterday so that you can go to sleep and then wake up tomorrow getting better once again. That's what this podcast is all about. It is the podcast solely dedicated to personal development in every way, shape, and form. So today is going to be a Q&A. We're going to dive into some specific questions that came in through Instagram and the podcast Q&A form. So first and foremost, if you like this podcast and you want your questions answered, like if these Q&As, which oddly enough, they are some of the most downloaded podcasts of the Q&As. And obviously it depends on the topics. If you know anything about content creation from a titling perspective, you know what you title it does a lot for what ends up happening. But the Q&As always do really well. And part of the reason is because I'm helping you with your specific issues, your specific problems, the specific things that you want to talk about and go through and get help with. So if that resonates and you're like, oh shit, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I would love some literal personal help and coaching for free through the podcast. Drop me a question. Click the link in the description of the show. And by the way, if you follow me on Instagram at Cody McBroom, this link is also in the menu that is linked on my Instagram every day. So like anytime you have a question, just go there, click that link at the bottom of that menu. I think it's like the second button up. It'll say podcast Q&A. Click that and you can fill out your question. That is in the description of the show too. We don't, you know, use your information, so we don't need your name and email and stuff like that. It's in there so that I can respond to you just in case. Actually, I think it's just a name now. I think we took the email out. Either way, I don't know. Maybe it's not required. Whatever it is, we're not going to spam you. Don't worry. So go hit that up. Ask me your questions. Before we get into the podcast, I actually have a specific topic I want to kind of dive into, and that's called the gap and the gain. So I'm going to spend just a brief bit on this podcast talking about this topic. And I actually learned this topic from a book, and the book is called The Gap and the Gain. Funny enough. And really, like, if I had to boil down what this is about, it's really going to help you. And I'm not even done with the book, but it's going to help you continue growing without falling victim to never being happy, right? So I have a saying that is always fulfilled, never satisfied. And it is the perfect way to describe what I believe success requires, right? The mindset that is required for success. And that is that you're constantly fulfilled, meaning I'm present, I'm happy in the moment, I am content with what I'm doing, and I want to continue doing it because I'm truly happy, right? Like, happiness is not an ending destination that you find. I've said this many times. It's the act of getting happier that actually creates happiness. It's a process. It's not an outcome. And I believe being fulfilled is what allows people to continue to be successful, because it's the journey towards success that you learn so much from, but it's also the journey towards success that is actually so satisfying and fulfilling and creates so much happiness and reward. So that's really important. However, I will be the first to admit that I don't always live by that mindset. There's plenty of times where I fall out of that mindset and I actually get into a negative mindset. And I'm a human, right? I'm an entrepreneur, and this happens to me. So this idea of how to continue growing without falling victim to never being happy, it came from this book, and this book was picked up by me because honestly, it was one of those moments where I was like, well, God intended this, because somebody recommended this book to me. Honestly, it had to have been at least a year ago, a while ago. And I bought it with three others. And if you're a bookworm like me, or if you're somebody who consumes a lot of content and likes to read and just learn and get better and is constantly trying to, you know, just consume information to improve any and everything in your life, you're like me, and sometimes you'll buy a stack of books and most of them just go in the closet. Like, I hate that I'm admitting that, but like, there's been plenty of times where I'm like, well, I'm not going to just buy this one. I'm going to buy all three of their recommendations. And I buy all three. I read one and then I forget about the others because I move on to the next recommendation I get from somebody else. And so this book's been sitting in my closet of my office for I don't know how long. And I've been extremely busy lately. Like, I mean, this quarter has been the first quarter of the year. I should just say this year has just been nuts for me. And there's been a lot of projects and things I've been working on and things I've even tested, you know, like even the seminar we hosted here, which was such a huge success. Like that was a test for a certain demographic, for a certain product, certain service to kind of test the water, see if this is something that people would want, see how it would do. So there's a lot of things that I'm testing and implementing and working on and practicing for the future of the tailored empire, I call it, because, you know, it's not just tailored coaching method. That's the let's say the king of it all. That's the biggest and the most important business. But there's also the Tailored Life podcast. There's the Tailored Trainer. We're almost finished with we're finished with what are called the tech packs, but like the mockups and all that for Tailored Coaching Method merch. So we're putting together a Shopify and we're gonna have that on the website. And it's like this really, really cool I don't even know how to explain. I mean, it's like shirts, you know, shirts, shorts, hats, but like the detail, it's just, it's insane. I have an amazing friend and connection that is able to help with this. And it's like literally going to be so sick. So we originally were just doing it for clients, but it'll be available to anybody who is in our audience and our network. But the point of this is I've been so busy. I haven't been able to read much at all. I've actually literally, I do my daily Bible reading, and which doesn't take long to read a proverb and a piece of a scripture, and then I'm off to work. I'm just grinding away. Like, and honestly, I wake up at 5 a.m., I start working to get my brain flowing, and then I take a break and read the Bible, journal, and then I come back to work, and I don't stop until it's time to train at 3-ish. So it's just been nuts, and honestly, I've been kind of stuck in this negative place, and if you're listening to this, and maybe you can relate, this might help you a ton, and if maybe you can't relate because you haven't been to this spot yet, then maybe this will help you avoid this pitfall. But as you grow as an entrepreneur and as you grow as an individual striving for more and more, sometimes it can get really hard to continue pushing forward hard. It can be difficult to continue, putting the weight of the world, let's say, on your shoulders, because there's a lot of responsibility required with being an entrepreneur, being a CEO, being a coach. I mean, just the amount of people involved that you are directly responsible to or for. Literally their paychecks or mortgage, but also people's health and then people's love and your family. And then like you're putting yourself in this position because that's what you love to do. But a lot of times, you know, people like me who do this for a living and do it with so much passion because that's what they know they're born to do and love to do. There is these periods of times every once in a while where you actually put yourself on the back burner, and it can be difficult because you burn out or if you're not in the mix doing things and literally helping people and communicating with people and engaging with people and you feel important for those reasons, you get in this slump. And it's, to be completely transparent, it's depressing. And there's been numerous times throughout my career that my wife Shannon has had to pick me up out of that depression and like literally help me through it and snap me out of it, so to speak. And it can be tough, but like, there's something I read in this book, and this is why I said God like opened this door for me, because I'm like, all right, I need to start shifting some of my habits. And this is a really big first key, is like, if you ever get into that negative mindset, if you ever get into a dark place, if you ever get into a inconsistent place, if you're like not doing the shit you know you need to do, you're not adhering, you're not staying consistent, you're not doing whatever it is that you know you need to do in order to get to the place you want to be, when you're not doing those things, sometimes you just need to look back at what you always did to stay on top of it all, to stay in a good place, to stay in a positive mindset, to stay consistent, to stay adherent to the plan, right? Whatever produced success in your past is likely going to produce success in your future. And I know they say like new levels, new devils, and what got you there won't get you there, right? Like what got you here won't get you there, meaning what I've done up to this point isn't going to get me to the next level. And that's true to an extent, but it's also not true. Because the difference between what got me here and what's going to get me there is just more of the same thing or more details of the same thing or a slight variation of the same thing or more help, because you can't do it alone anymore, right? But for the most part, you can look back and go, okay, when I'm in a good mindset, when I'm present, when I'm happy, when I'm fulfilled, when I'm enjoying the process and the journey and I'm staying consistent, What am I doing, honestly, day to day? You know, so for me, I always look at my habits. Okay, journaling, meditating, praying, reading, like what are the things? Training, cardio, like sleep, like whatever the things are, right? And one of the things for me is reading. So I open my closet in my office. I'm like, I need to read. There's stacks of books in here. And my eye just instantly goes to this baby blue book with yellow text on it. And so I'm like, okay, let me grab that. And it's The Gap and the Gain. So I start reading it and instantly I'm like, this is literally what I'm going through right now. And it has the answer. And it was just wild. So this book is called The Gap and the Gain. And The Gap and the Gain is a book by Dan Sullivan and Dr. Benjamin Hardy, who is Dan Sullivan is an entrepreneur coach, business coach. And then Dr. Benjamin Hardy is has his PhD in psychology. So he's, I believe, a psychologist. But there's this idea in here called The Gap and the Gain. I'm literally going to read this part to you because it's so phenomenal. So basically what we do, you know, as entrepreneurs especially, but like most people, the problem we have, and this is where we associate the gap in the game. The problem most people have when they're striving for success is they live in the gap. And the gap is actually comparing or measuring yourself now to your ideal, right? I talk about creating your ideal self, creating your tailored life, having goals, 90-day outcomes, year-long goals, 3 to 5 year plans. That stuff's all great. You got to have a North Star. You got to know the direction you're going in. But the problem becomes that if I create this perfect world scenario of what I will be someday, who I will become, the type of dad I will be, the type of father I will be, the type of entrepreneur I will be, the type of coach I will be, type of athlete, physique athlete I will be, or also the type of person I am in those categories on my absolute best day when I'm 100%, right? If I'm only comparing to that version, I'm in the gap. And that's a very depressing place to be. You're gonna deal with failure, frustration, disappointment, low self-esteem, guilt, and depression because that is the highest version of yourself. It might be a current highest version of yourself because you've experienced it because those are your best days, or it's a version of yourself that is not even existing yet because you're not there yet, because that's like your perfect world ideal scenario, right? I'm 31 years old. Let's say I want to be a multimillionaire by the time I'm 40. Okay, well, I'm not a multimillionaire right now. So every day I live in the gap. I'm comparing myself to being a multimillionaire. I feel broke. I feel stupid. I feel like a failure, right? Now, we can live in the gain. In the gain is different. The gain is measuring to where you started compared to where you are now by just visualizing the future, the ideal, the perfect world scenario, right? So if I'm, easy math, I want to have $1 million in my bank. I want to be a millionaire and I have $500,000 in my bank. But once upon a time, I had $0 in my bank, right? Well, if I measure myself against the ideal and I'm in the gap, like I said before, I'm like $500,000 away. I'm only 50% to my goal. I feel like I'm not even, like that's nothing to measure. Like that's not success because I'm far behind. I'm only halfway there. God, this sucks. I live in that glass half empty, right? Now, if I measure myself to where I was, I'm halfway there. Glass half full. I got $500,000. I used to have zero. I was broke as shit. Yeah, I'm not a millionaire yet, but I'm wealthy. I'm doing it. I'm accomplishing things. I'm already almost there, right? So it's a completely different mindset. If somebody's like, my ultimate goal is to lose 40 pounds and they're 20 pounds down, they can look at that as I have so far to go, or I've came so far because you're halfway. And both are true, but what you focus on is what, like where your focus goes, your energy flows. That's another saying I took from a mentor before, but that's a really good way of looking at it. If I focus on the fact that I'm only halfway there and I still have so far to go, I'm going to focus on the fact that I'm not even close to my goal yet. But if I focus on the fact that I've come so far, I'm already down 20 pounds. Well, guess what? I'm only going to put my energy towards the positive aspect of already being halfway there because I've already lost 20 pounds, right? And when we live in the gain, which is this part, and that's me, again, comparing myself right now to where I was. So I'm looking at what I achieved and I'm going, okay, I'm going to measure myself against my past self who was at zero and now I'm at blank, right? Rather than measuring myself to my future self, which is at a bigger number, right? So for the weight loss goal, again, 40 pounds is the ideal future self. 20 pounds is the current self. 0 pounds is the past self. If I measure myself towards my 40-pound self, I'm a failure. I'm not there yet. If I measure myself against my 0-pound self, I'm crushing it. I'm already halfway there and I'm doing super well. And this is where we see success, satisfaction, confidence, high self-esteem, enjoyment, and optimism. You are living in the process. And so this has been something that, like, you know, I've always said, look at the glass half full, right? We all kind of know that. And I think that's a very common saying, right? Look at the glass half full, not half empty. But this idea of the gap and the gain really allowed me to take a step back and honestly create inner peace and just create happiness and like fulfillment again, just like be about the journey because we can get ahead of ourselves. And if you think about that saying right there, don't get ahead of yourself. Getting ahead of yourself is living in the future. And so if we look at this, that is being in the gap. I'm comparing myself to my ideal, which is my future self, which I still want to strive for. I need to visualize that. So don't get me wrong. You don't want to ignore that. But if I'm only comparing myself to that version or that visualization of my ideal self and the ultimate goal, I'm going to be miserable. Rather, I can live in the gain instead of the gap, and I can measure myself to my past self, the starting point compared to where I am today, and I'm a winner. And this is also really important to do when you're thinking about other people in your life. So if I'm looking at my wife or my daughter or my employees and my coaches and my clients or anybody, and I'm measuring them against their ideal, the best case scenario, the perfect, like, come on, like if my daughter has a rough day, and I'm like, you're always throwing fits. And I'm worked up and annoyed by it. I'm measuring her against what? A perfect child, which doesn't exist. What about like the great things that her teacher has said and the great doctor's visit we had the other day? It said she's healthier than an ox and nothing wrong with her. And her perfect days where she's a cute angel that is laughing and cuddling and loving, right? Like, let me compare to that. That's the norm. Right? Even on her normal days, there's a way to make sure that you're looking at this towards other individuals as well is what I'm getting at. And so again, the way I believe that you can continue growing without falling victim to never being happy because you're not there yet and you're living in that future, you're getting ahead of yourself is this idea of the gap in the gain. And I want to encourage you to try today, right away, start trying this right away is process and think about this stuff, like kind of have that outer body experience, right? When you sit down, like every situation you go through, stop and go, am I living in the gap or the gain? If you're living in the gain, you're looking at the glass half full and you're excited because you're on the mission and you're improving by the day and you're optimistic about what the future holds. If you're living in the gap, it's a depressing place to be in, trust me. And I've fallen victim to it too many times. And this is something that can pull you out of it. So, we're going to get into questions now. I just really wanted to spend a little bit of time kind of explaining that, my aha moments with it, and again, sharing this book. It's written for entrepreneurs. I mean, the subtitle says The High Achiever's Guide to Happiness, Confidence, and Success. But I do think it's good for anybody who just wants to achieve. You don't have to be an entrepreneur. You can be somebody who works within a company. You can be somebody who's just chasing their fitness goals. And if you have this ideal or this mindset of, you know, measuring yourself from your starting point versus your ideal self, you're going to live in the gain, not the gap, and it's going to be a huge difference. So, all right, let's get some rock star in me and move into the questions. All right, the first one, Megan.W.Kinney. So Megan Kinney. What is the best macro breakdown for a building phase? This is a really good question. And we actually have another question later on in the podcast. Hopefully I'll get to that one. I never get to as many questions as I think I'm going to. That is kind of similar, asking about like higher fat approach. So, but not in a building phase. So let's get into this. The best macro ratio or the macro breakdown that you should be following with your diet in order to go through a quote unquote building phase is going to be a high protein, high carb, low fat diet. Hands down. I have zero doubts about that. I know there's a lot of people that don't like to talk in black and white terms about what is best or optimal. But if I'm looking at this scenario and I'm not considering personal preference and or adherence, that's going to be the answer. If we're just on paper looking at science, there's no debating that in my opinion. Now, when adherence comes into play, we do have to consider that stuff. Because I could look at somebody and say, hey, based on your body weight, you only need 40 grams of fat a day. And then they try to do it and they're like, there's no way I can adhere to this. This is miserable. I can't eat my favorite meats. I can't even have any whole eggs, like whatever. If that bugs them, then they can't, then that's the it, plain and simple, right? People like me can get away with a lower fat diet. They don't really care as much, but I still don't go to 40 grams, right? 50, 55 grams is plenty for me to still feel like I have some flexibility. But I eat pretty much like a bro, which is pretty low fat. But when we look at, like, again, the best macro ratio or breakdown for building phase, I'm never going to speak in terms of ratios and percentages, but the best macros to, the best macros, the best macro breakdown, or how you should break down your macros within your calorie deficit. I'm sorry, not calorie deficit, calorie intake. So how you should break down your macros from your calorie intake. If your goal is building and you're going through a literal building phase, I'm going to say a high protein, high carb, low fat diet. And typically what that looks like is going to be at least 0.8 grams per pound, but there's still plenty of situations and reasons where you can push that up to 1.2 grams per pound of body weight. And I know that seems like a lot. And no, I'm not talking about lean mass. I'm talking about total mass. Because number one, if you have a lot of fat to lose, you shouldn't be going through a building phase. You should be going through a fat loss phase first. If you're going into a building phase, it tells me that you're already pretty lean and you're ready to add some weight because you need to add size and muscle and you're trying to build muscle mass, which does weigh more than fat. Actually, it's weight on the scale though. And so you got to be ready for that. And so based on your body weight, 1 to 1.2 grams per pound is typically what I would recommend for protein. I'm not going to get into a whole protein lecture, but there is justifiable reasons to consume above your body weight, even in a building phase. Now, there's more reasons to do so in a cutting phase. It's more important, but it's still advantageous, in my opinion, to go a little bit above body weight in protein during a building phase. So we start there, then we go to fats, and then we'll go to carbs. Fats are going to be on the lower end. We just need enough to support our hormones. The reality is like one of the biggest reasons why we want to avoid a low-fat diet is because it can have negative impacts on your sex hormones. And these sex hormones can be pretty advantageous for not just your metabolism and health matters, but also for building muscle and recovering and strength and fat loss. So body composition changes, right? And so because of that, we need to have a minimum amount. However, one of the biggest reasons why those specific hormones suffer from a low-fat diet is not just because of a low-fat diet. It's from a low-fat diet, right? And so I say diet as in a deficit, right? So this is, unfortunately, we can't use diet as a blanket term that says if you're dieting, you're in a fat loss phase, you're in a deficit. But that's pretty much the case, right? Because you can have a building diet, a mass-building diet. I would say call it a nutrition plan though. Typically diet is going to be looked at synonymously with fat loss, right? In a deficit. And I say that because when you go into a calorie deficit, calories being in a deficit, your energy balance being in that deficit state where you're losing fat, that starts to suppress your hormones more than a low-fat diet does. And then if you add a low-fat approach to that deficit, which is already negatively impacting your sex hormones, which is fine, it's normal, I'm not saying it's bad because that's just part of dieting, it will reverse itself. That's when we start to see the hormones suffer even more. So if we know we're in a building phase, that means we're going to be in a surplus. Even if it's a small surplus, it's still a surplus. And this would be the case with maintenance calories too. We can follow a lower fat diet without any worries about hormonal health because our calories are plentiful and we're not losing a bunch of body fat. When our body fat gets lower and lower and lower and our calories are lower and lower, that is when we see a significant, or I should say a more significant impact to our sex hormones. So because of this, we're totally safe doing a really low fat diet. Actually, there's even research showing like really, really low fat diets in a controlled setting because normal people can't eat that low fat consistently. It's just honestly miserable. So you wouldn't do it, but nonetheless you can. So, for example, if you are like me, I'm 180 pounds now, just over, I think it was 183 point something this morning. So let's do the math. 183 times 0.25. 45 grams of fat. That is the bare minimum. Going below or at or below that for an extended period of time might show some issues. So I typically recommend people don't go below 0.3. So for me, 0.3 is going to be about 50 grams. So that's a low fat diet for me, right? 0.4 for some females, because if you are a female who is under the weight of 130 pounds, I would say 0.4 is a better recommendation for that. And sometimes I have women or even guys that I'm going closer to 0.5. It just depends. And if somebody's like a quote unquote hard gainer, which there's nobody who can't build muscle, can't gain weight. Trust me. I've had plenty of people tell me that and I've helped them gain weight. Sometimes we have to crank the fats up a little bit because we just need calories. They're just burning through calories too easily. But nonetheless, let's say 0.3 to 0.35 grams per pound for the lower fat end. So we have 1 to 1.2 grams per pound of body weight in protein. We have 0.3 grams per pound of body weight in fat, maybe upwards of 0.4. And then we give the rest of our calories to carbs. And then from that total caloric intake, which would be at maintenance, we're just going to times that by 5%. And that'll be the surplus. It's a small surplus and we don't need to go much bigger than that. And we're going to linearly increase calories as you adapt to those to continue building muscle. But to start, you don't need to go hog wild with a calorie surplus. You're just going to get fat. And we don't want that. We want to build muscle tissue. So all that being said, the best macro breakdown for a building phase, in my opinion, is going to be a high protein, high carb, low fat diet. And that's going to look like about 1 to 1.2 grams per pound of body weight in protein, not lean body weight, but all body weight in protein. Because if you're in this place and you are going for a building phase, you're probably not in a place where you have a bunch of fat to lose. So we can go off your total body weight for this. We're going to go about 0.3 to 0.4 grams per pound of body weight in fats per day. And then we're going to give the rest of our calories to carbohydrates. And then once we reach that maintenance total with that macro breakdown, we're going to go into a 5% calorie surplus. And that increase in calories is going to solely come from carbohydrates. That is the best approach for building muscle from a dietary perspective. And adherence and personalization of that diet just to make sure somebody enjoys the diet more is the only thing that would change that. Maybe they struggle to get that much protein, or maybe they're like me and some of the guys I know who like eating even more protein, right? They're like love barbecue, they love meat. They might eat a little too much protein, right? So we can adjust that number up a little bit if we need to. Maybe they need a little bit more fat just because of the culture of their diet or their family or how they like to eat or what they crave. That's fine too. But again, from like a black and white answer of what's the best macro breakdown, that's what it's going to be for a building phase. Next question comes from my man, Damien_Figs. How has reconnecting with God and your faith helped you most? Oh man. I could probably do a whole podcast on that one. So I'll first say that, you know, for me personally, it's not even reconnecting. Like, I don't know. Like, I try to avoid sharing too much of it, to be honest with you, just because that's not what this podcast is about. Like, this podcast is not and will never be a religious podcast, so I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, my, you know, it's not my job to try to convert people to believe in what I believe in. I'm just a very real and raw person. I have no problem saying what I believe. If you ask me a question, I'm going to tell you the truth, even if that gets me in trouble, because the truth is what matters most to me. It's a, you know, it's a core value of mine, is just being authentic. But nonetheless, it's never been reconnecting with me. And I said all that I said just now, because I don't know if I've shared that aspect of it, but I didn't grow up learning much about God or faith or anything. I really didn't. It just wasn't in my life. Right. And it just, you know, for my family or my upbringings of it, just wasn't talked about much at all. And so I kind of went on my own journey later on in life. And it wasn't until personally I went, got into a more dark place, that I actually really started seeking God to get out of that dark place. Because I believe that although I've always felt pulled towards God and figuring out my faith and understanding what it meant to me and how it was going to shape my life, what my purpose was and all those kind of things. Cause I always found myself getting into those conversations with people who understood it more than me or who could give me answers. I also always felt pulled to reading and learning, but I never fully jumped in. And I hate to say that it wasn't until I was in a place of need that I went for it, but that's just the reality of how it happened. And, I was in a very just dark place mentally and spiritually and emotionally, especially. And when you are in that dark place and you are honestly battling with depression and anxiety and overwhelm and lack of purpose and clarity, you're going to seek the most powerful things to get you out of that. And that's what I did. And I didn't really even seek God to get out of it. I feel like I got pulled towards him to get out of it. And that's honestly, that is exactly how it helped me most, is pulling me out of the dark times and giving me clarity on purpose. I would say the most consistent thing that it gives me and has helped me is trust in my plan. And by my plan, I mean his plan for me, the plan for my life. It gives me a sense of trust in my next steps, and it gives me a sense of trust in taking action and taking risks and being vulnerable and not caring what people think. Because at the end of the day, if I know I'm doing what's right in the core of my conscience and my heart, then I know that's God telling me I'm doing the right thing, because that's what my conscience is. That's what I believe. And so it gives me a level of confidence to take every single step forward like I can't explain. You know, and I think that's the most powerful thing about it, is that I trust in God and I'm just going to keep moving forward no matter what. If I'm doing what I know to be right to my core because of what my plan, you know, the plan I've been given for my life is, then I just have zero doubts about the success I will reach and when it will come, you know, even when, like, and this is the hardest part, when bad things happen to you and negative things happen and you lose money, you lose people, you lose family, you lose relationships, you struggle with clarity, like all the things, like, you know, one of the things Cody Smith, my good friend, tells me is you can't have a testimony without a test first, right? And so a testimony is going to be your revelation. It's going to be your lessons. It's going to be your testimony, right? And the testimony for anything requires a test. And so the testimony I can give you right now has required tests, right? And so it allows me to pass the test, because if you know that the test has a purpose, if you know the struggle has a lesson, if you know the negative has a positive, if you know that the valley has a peak after it, like, you just keep going. No matter what, you're like, damn, I'm down right now. I don't know how long I'm going to be down right now. I don't know why I'm being put down right now. I don't know how much further down I'll go. I just know that as long as I buck up and get through it and have faith, I will get through it and I will move on and I will move up out of this down period and I will win and I will be successful, right? And I think that's ultimately what it has given me, is like the faith in God has given me faith in the process of life. You know what I mean? And shit, I mean, you can even relate that to anybody who has had a transformation with us at Tailored Coaching Method too. Like, you think about their testimonies, right? When I interview, I've been doing this and we haven't posted it yet. I'm so excited to, though, but we've been interviewing some clients and getting videos of them. And I do it in person, which is really cool. So I did at seminar, and I have a couple people coming next week as I'm recording this to the HQ. So if you're listening to this and you're a Washington client that I haven't reached out to yet, let me know if you'd be interested in coming by and doing a testimony, because I haven't reached out to everybody yet, but we've started to reach out to people based on scheduling who live in Washington State. Or if you're going to be visiting Washington State and you're one of clients, let me know, because I would love to get you in here to share your testimony of the transformation you went through with us. But all the people who share their stories and their testimonies, they were tested, right? So when you listen to the interview of these people who had a transformation, it's not, hey, what was your result? Tell me how great it was. It's, where are you at now? Great result, success. Okay, cool. Where were you at? Down, lacking health, lacking confidence, overweight, not happy, not healthy. Okay, how did you get to where you are now from that place you were? Test after test after test, challenge after challenge after challenge, struggle after struggle after struggle. Because when you overcome those things, that's how you get to the point where you have the right to give a testimony. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know, it's a really, really profound thing if you think about it. But I think, like, you know, to answer your question specifically, how has reconnecting with God and your faith helped you the most? It was just connecting with God and my faith for the first time, to be honest with you. I didn't grow up around it. I believe in God, but I didn't ever really, I didn't give myself to Christ or like give, like, I just got baptized. I just started really, really reading the Bible a lot. Like, those kind of things, you know, and again, like, I don't, what others do doesn't affect me or impact me. This is just what I do and what I know helps me. But man, it makes life a lot better and purposeful. Like, yeah, I don't want to turn this whole podcast into that, but it gives you the purpose, right? It's the blueprint, it's the map, it's the, yeah. So it's done a lot for me, man. So I love that question. All right. Amber Rich, I've been lifting for 9 years, 3 years of powerlifting, but the past year I've taken a break from powerlifting and have been doing my own training. 4 to 5 days a week of lifting, boxing 1 to 2 days, and running 1 day. I've noticed that my left arm / left side of my upper body seems to be more defined. Specifically, my left shoulder is bigger and rounder. Would there be a reason for that? And how can I get the get my right arm / shoulder to catch up? Wow, so you're doing a full-blown hybrid approach. Really cool. 4 to 5 days a week lifting, 1 to 2 days of boxing, one day of running. Good shit. So you have an imbalance, basically. I've noticed that my left arm, left side of my body seems to be more defined. So what I would say is this. If you are right-handed, you probably box. It depends how long you've been boxing, right? But if you're boxing and you're that, if you're right-handed, your left arm is your lead arm, you could be getting a little bit more front delt work from that, because if you think about when you're punching and you're doing jabs, it's a lot of front delt on that left side, and then and you swing or you punch with that left arm 10 times more. Like if you've ever done boxing, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're boxing, you're throwing jab, jab. I mean, think about the saying, jab, 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 right hook, right? 3 to 1, right? Jab, 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 right hook. Yeah, 3 jabs to 1 right hook. And the right hook comes around, so it's not even a ton of front delt. You actually get a lot of trap, lat, because you're swinging. It's a big, wide punch. But on top of that, too, you got to remember, like, when you're boxing, you're in a protracted position, so your shoulders are rolled forward, and you're also shrugging. So you're going to get a lot of overwork done, like overtraining, just a lot of tension up in your traps and your shoulders, because you're constantly shrugging, you're constantly in that protracted position. So I say all that to say, your positioning might just make your shoulder look bigger and rounder. If you're noticing more definition, that is honestly surprising. Usually people don't notice more definition. They might notice more size. So it's very hard to say without me being there personally. But what I would say is this, pretty simply, if you have an imbalance in general, right? Right side bigger than left side bigger than right side, vice versa, whatever it is. The thing that you want to work on is basically just adding a little bit of volume on that other side. And I've answered this question numerous times on the podcast, so apologies if you've heard this before. But I haven't done this yet. I need to, because my leg press does this. But for example, my left leg is about a half inch to a full inch. I want to say it was a full inch, and I think I'm closer to like 3/4 inch now. It's catching up as I go through this bulking phase. But my left leg is smaller than my right leg. Like, my left quad and hamstring is smaller. And the reason for that is because I've had 2 surgeries on my left knee. It's obvious, right? But if I really wanted to be smart about catching up to it, yesterday was my leg day, for example. I did leg extensions and leg curls. I could have done them single leg and added a couple reps or a full set. So I could have done, like, I did 3 sets of seated leg curls, 3 sets of leg extensions. And then I did 4 or 5, because I worked up to a heavy set of leg presses. And my leg press at my facility can split in 2. So you can actually do unilateral leg presses, which is super cool, because it splits in the middle of the platform that you put your feet on. So for example, what I could do is I could easily have done single leg extensions and done 3 sets of both legs and a 4th set of my right leg, and then single leg seated leg curls and done 3 sets of both legs and then a 4th set for just my left leg, right? Or I could have done that with the leg curls, and instead of the leg extensions, I could have done that with my leg press, and I could have done my, let's say, 3 sets with both legs and 1 set with a single leg. It's the easiest way to do it, is just change some of your exercises to unilateral. Because again, if you're doing a military press, number one, if you do it unilateral, I can add a couple reps. I can add a little bit more volume to my bad side. Number two, I can start with the bad side. So even though you might be using your, like, let's say your left side. Yeah. Your left arm side is better, bigger. So maybe if you start with your right side, yeah, your left arm's not fatigued yet from the presses you did on the right side, but your heart rate is up, your central nervous system is fatigued, your overall, right, respiratory, oxidative, metabolic, all those systems, they're still a little bit fatigued. You're breathing hard. You need to recover from that. So you're still going to have slightly down performance from doing the right side. Whereas if you started with the left side, you'd start when you're completely fresh, muscular-wise, neurological-wise, joint-wise, and your oxidative respiratory metabolic side. So like your lungs, your breathing, your cardiovascular, right? So we want to start with the side that has more work to do, so the smaller side. So you're going to be fresher for that. And we want to potentially add a few reps or add a couple sets. Now, there's the obvious, you could just do a lower RIR. So like do single arm, leave two reps in the tank on your right side, go to failure on your left side. That's one way to do it. It's a little bit harder to track that from a progressive overload perspective. So I would recommend either adding reps. So maybe you do 8 per side, but you do 8 on the right side and 10 on the left side. You just do a couple extra reps. Or I would recommend doing a full extra set. So you do 3 sets on your right side, 4 sets on your left side. Pretty simple, right? But no matter what, we're just adding a little bit of volume. We do that slowly over time. And slowly but surely, it'll catch up. It just takes a little while. All right, I got 2 questions left, so let me see if I can crank these out. Lisa, who filled out the podcast Q&A form, no last name, just Lisa. When doing a when doing a refeed or diet break, are you going back up to maintenance calories or under, since you might have a new maintenance? Or would you suggest a calorie range such as adding 200 calories on refeed days? So, really good question. At first, you're probably just going up to what your maintenance calories were. So it kind of depends. There's a few scenarios that I would run you through right here. The first one is you go into a fat loss phase with a predetermined refeed day in mind, already planned out, meaning I start my diet today for fat loss. And when I calculate my calories for that deficit, I'm also calculating my maintenance caloric intake into there for a refeed day. So you can do that and keep your maintenance calories where they're at right now, because you have your deficit days and then you're leaving one day a week as your refeed day at maintenance based on your current maintenance, which is accurate because you haven't stepped into a diet yet or for long enough to cause any type of metabolic adaptation occur that would make that maintenance lower. Scenario 2 is that you start dieting and you don't start plugging in refeeds or diet breaks until you need it. And so maybe that's 6, 9, 10 weeks into the plan. You know, if you're anywhere between 2 to 3 months into your program and you start your fat loss phase and you start adding refeeds or diet breaks, at that point, some metabolic adaptation has already occurred. And that means that we're probably not going to be able to justify using your previous maintenance, because metabolic adaptation is going to start taking place at about 3 weeks. Doesn't mean it's like at its peak or it's full blown or it's causing like significant impacts or negative like impacts or slowing downs of the weight loss, right? It just means that at about 3 weeks, your body starts to adapt, right? Slowly but surely. And so at that point, we know that your intake might be a little bit lower. So if you're at that point, you would go based off your new maintenance, which you can do in a couple ways. One, you could just recalculate your calories based on your new body weight, because if you're 9 weeks in and you've already lost 12 pounds, well, just do your maintenance calories, calculate your maintenance calories again, but do it off of your current body weight, not your previous body weight, because that's more reflective of where it was. The other thing you can do is if you did start with a refeed, but you know that you've adapted since the last time you did it, because maybe you took one early on in the diet and you haven't taken one in weeks, look at your diet right now and see what you've dropped. So if compared to when you started your diet, you've dropped it another 300 calories, drop your previous refeed by 300 calories. So for example, you have a refeed day and you're, even for easier math, like, you have like 300 grams of carbs and then you jump into a deficit. Now you're eating 200 grams carbs. You drop 100 grams carbs and you take refeeds at 275, right? Then you've adjusted, you've done things, and now you're eating 175 grams carbs. Well, your refeed would be 250, right? Because your deficit days, you drop 25 grams carbs. You should drop 25 grams carbs off your refeed next time you do that too, because that's probably what the adaptation is going to reflect, right? Really simple math. It's not exact, not perfect, but it's a good way to guess for that. And then the last way you kind of mentioned, suggest a calorie range such as 200 calories on a refeed days. Not really. I think that something like that is kind of just spitballing or like, you know, throwing shit at a wall and hoping it sticks. It's not very calculated. I'm the type of coach, and you know, at Taylor Coaching Method, we like to take a more methodical approach that can get us exactly what we want out of the result. So we're going to be a little bit more precise with our calculations, be more specific and have reasoning behind it, rather than me just saying, shit, yeah, add 200 calories. Like, it's just like, what? Okay. Like, if I'm going to go that route, it's purely based on psychology. It's not based on actual thermodynamics. And there's no point in having a caloric intake hit. I would rather the client just have a free meal so you can actually enjoy it, not try to squeeze something in. It's like, and this is another, you know, scenario. And often what I like doing with people who are on fat loss phases that are gym pop, it's like, I'm not going to give you a specific refeed unless you're a physique athlete or you're somebody who needs those boundaries, right? And that's fine if you do, because I have plenty of clients that have been like that as well. But a lot of the people we work with, we're like, hey, this weekend, I want you to go enjoy that dinner you're going to. Like, what's the restaurant? They tell you, like, okay, what do you love getting there? And they tell you, it's like this, maybe it's a special cocktail and it's this thing, or maybe it's a dessert, whatever, cool. I just want you to have that, have it on the plate, do your thing. When you leave, refeed's done. Like, go have a free meal. So a little bit of a long-winded answer for that, but essentially the answer is yes and no, and the answer is there's also different ways to do it. Last question for today, Emily Shoup. What is the, and this is the one that relates to the other question about the best breakdown for building muscle. She asked, what is the harm or side effects from eating a higher fat diet? I'm eating at maintenance and I've noticed I tend to crave higher fat foods. I am 5'5 and weigh 158 pounds. My maintenance calories are 2,500. Average macros for the last week are 155 protein, 225 carb, 95 fat. Should I change my distributions of fats and carbs? My goal is to build muscle and I'm staying at maintenance for the rest of the year. My answer would be yes, you absolutely should. So number one, if your goal is to maintain and you are on a maintenance diet, then I don't think there's anything wrong with having a slightly higher fat intake. If you want to have a balanced approach with balanced protein, fats, and carbs, or like a high protein with an even split of fats and carbs, or even a higher portion of your calories from fats than carbs, that's fine because you're just trying to maintain. Now, you mentioned you're trying to build muscle. So if I'm trying to build muscle, or I'm trying to get a client to build as much muscle as possible at maintenance, especially, but if in a surplus, it does have the same answer, I'm going to have lower fats. And so you being 158 pounds at 5'5 as a female, I'm going to drop your fats quite a bit. Honestly, you could drop your fats by 30 to 35 and still be totally fine. That's 60 to 65 grams of fat. That is more than enough. I would also bump your protein up a little bit. 158 pounds, 155 protein. I would probably go, because you got to remember, you're going to be getting a lot of carbs at 225 or more. And if we drop 35 grams of fat, now you're going to have an extra almost 70 grams of carbs. I would bet you're going to get a lot of protein from trace sources like rice, potatoes, veggies, stuff like that. And so I'm going to lean on getting a little bit more protein than 158, which is your body weight, because that allows me to get more high quality sources of protein and not rely on hitting my protein intake from low quality protein sources, which are usually trace proteins from carbs and fats. So I would bump your protein up a little bit and I would drop your fats quite a bit. And then I would crank your carbs up based on how many fats you drop. And I guarantee you would build more muscle and you'd store less fat in that process. You got to remember that carbs are going to be more likely to burn as fuel. They're going to be more likely to increase your activity level throughout the day. So your total daily energy expenditure will crank up, partially because your thermic effect of food will be higher. You burn more calories digesting carbs and fats by a little bit, but also because it's better fuel. So you're going to move more, step more, train harder, all those kind of things. You're also more likely to build muscle because muscle is 60 to 65% water. And if you want to store more water in the muscle so they're hydrated, they can perform better, and then they can actually duplicate or grow from a muscle tissue and cell perspective, we actually need more carbs to fill up the muscle tissue with glycogen, which is carbohydrates, and water and sodium and creatine and all the things that help us grow. So carbs are going to be so much more advantageous for muscle, hands down. And so if you're at maintenance and you're trying to build muscle at maintenance, you definitely want to have lower fats, higher carbs, because already being at maintenance isn't the most advantageous place to grow. If you want to build a lot of muscle, we know you got to be in a surplus of calories. And more important than that, your training's got to be really dialed in, which you can head to the Taylor Trainer and get a 7-day free trial. But no, like, we know your training needs to be really dialed in. And if we're going to be training harder, training more frequently, with higher volumes, creating more mechanical tension, doing more loads, we need to eat more carbs, right? Ideally, we need to eat more calories because we need to be in a calorie surplus. And that's how we actually tip the scale to growing and gaining versus losing or maintaining. And if our goal is muscle growth, we need to gain a bit. But on top of that, if we're trying to build muscle at maintenance, it's even more important because you're trying to build muscle at a suboptimal place. So if we're trying to build muscle in a state from an energy balance perspective that isn't geared towards necessarily growing or building muscle, because it's not, it's geared towards maintaining, we really need to optimize the finer details, which means you got to have a low-fat, high-carb, moderate to high-protein diet. You probably got to be taking creatine. You need to be drinking plenty of water. You should be definitely getting enough sleep. You got to be dialed in the gym, right? Like, building muscle at maintenance is hard because you're still at maintenance. And unless you're a newbie, you're not going to gain as much as you could. But you absolutely can. I've seen plenty of clients do it by dialing in all the finer details. This is where I used to always say, stack the 1%. You stack the 1% by having creatine, taking fish oil, getting an extra 30 minutes of sleep, drinking enough water, having more carbs and fats, like all these little things. By the time you stack all these 1% items up, you're improving by an extra 5, 10, 15% because you stacked all the 1%. So I hope that makes sense. I definitely think you should change those up. But nonetheless, that should answer your question and hopefully help you and anybody else who's trying to gain muscle while at maintenance. I hope all of you guys took some stuff away from this podcast. I hope that intro about the gap and the gain really hit home and helped you like it helped me. I'm going to continue reading this book and I highly recommend it. It's called The Gap and the Gain. I have a link to all my Amazon book recommendations in the description of this podcast, which I'm going to update here soon. So as you're listening to this, it's probably updated because I'm probably going to do it after this show now because I've read a few books since I made that. But go check that out because that'll get you the exact books. People are always asking me, what are your top books for mindset or discipline or nutrition and training? They're all in there. Go check those out. As you guys know, I also operate and own an app. So if you need your training dialed in and some of those training answers or questions really clicked with you or hit home, go check it out. It's 7-day free trial, thetaylortrainer.com. If you want to train with me directly, you actually can now in there too, because I just added, literally it went live yesterday. So I haven't even posted about it as I'm recording this, because I'm going to kind of start talking about it here soon going into the weekend so people know. And if you're listening to this, it means that this is like week one, people will start it because this will air on a Monday and the program just aired in there. It's called The Lean Bulk and it's literally exactly what I'm doing. So if you want to bulk with me, if you want to gain muscle alongside me and do exactly what I'm doing in the gym, go check that out. It's geared towards upper body, so it's obviously more for men. But if you're a female and you want to build muscle, we have the Bikini Comp. We have Strong Her. We have multiple programs in there. 4-day female physique that is really, really good for all of you as well. And of course, if the nutrition stuff hit home, you need personalized assistance or guidance or coaching, accountability, system structures, and a guaranteed framework that actually helps you lose fat, build muscle, get healthier, and achieve your goals, head to tailoredcoachingmethod.com/online-coaching or click the big yellow button on the homepage of the website, and we'd love to chat with you totally free and figure out if it's a good fit for you. Last but not least, as always, I appreciate you guys listening to this so much. I'm honored to be on the mic, guiding you in your personal development and helping you create the tailored life in your own way. So if this does help you, just make sure you leave a 5-star rating and review. We need to get those reviews up. I'm getting close to those high numbers of 1,000 reviews. I would love it so much if you did leave a review. It would mean the world to me. Share it with a friend if you can. Otherwise, I just appreciate you being here, and I will catch you next time.